Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Well, I didn't think you had it in you.
I'm your huckleberry.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Why, Johnny Ringo, you look like somebody just walked over your grave.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
But it's not with you, Holiday.
I beg to differ, sir. We started a game we never got to finish. Play for blood, remember?
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
I was just fooling about.
I wasn't.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour number two. 1:03 p.m. here on The Fan. Wade tweeted us, Magic's lists aren't ranked alphabetical order, but as Dirt pointed out, other lists were not in alphabetical order.
Yeah, I think some of them are. Some of them are. Like, his top 60 hip-hop artist goes Tupac, Biggie, LL Cool J, Run DMC, A Tribe Called Quest, Beastie Boys.
Well, so, also, I know why he didn't do it, but yeah. We know Cosby's in his top 60 TV shows of all time.
Sure.
Right? Despite how disgusting the dude is.
Yeah, I don't care if they're in alphabetical order or not. Just looking at those top 30 shows of all time, anybody who has First Take as one of the 30 best TV shows in the history of television, that tells you all you need to know.
Exactly. All right, well, let's check in with Oregon State football. Their fall camp's been getting underway, and they start this season against Oklahoma State on August 30th. That's a 7:30 kick. A lot of anticipation to see what the Beavers are going to be this year. Some people think, two wins again. Some people think maybe they surprise. So we'll talk with our good friend Angie Machado of BeaverBlitz.com. She joins us now, and she's on Twitter at AngieMachado1. Angie, great to have you back on the radio program. What is the update on the quarterback battle? What's been going on between Jake Luton and Tristan Jebbia?
Well, hey, guys. You know, it's interesting. You ask any coach, and they say they're not ready to name a starting quarterback. So this, like, I say it in air quotes, battle is continuing to go on. But every single time we see 11-on-11 or we see any scrimmaging going on, Jake Luton is taking first team reps, and he looks really good. So nothing against Tristan Jebbia, but, you know, Jake's lost 5 to 10 pounds. He looks a little stronger. He looks a little faster. He won't be, you know, nobody's going to confuse him for a dual threat quarterback, but he is able to escape the pocket a little bit. And he's very dialed in with, you know, his top two receivers and Noah Togiai and Isaiah Hodgins. Hmm.
Yeah, the quarterback position always gets a lot of interest, I think, no matter where you look, especially when you have a high-profile transfer coming in and people wondering how he's going to be. But really, you look at Oregon State last year, the offense wasn't the issue. I think they're up to about 27 points per game, and that even was with dealing with quarterback injuries all season. I think everybody knows the main concern is defensively. This is a team that had a lot of trouble stopping people last year. So 9 starters returning on defense. You got a good feeling about that. Where are they at in camp, and what are people saying about how the defense is looking?
You know, the biggest thing I've seen with the defense, and I've been to a ton of practices already, is just their intensity, and they are much improved over a year ago. I will say that. So I think you're seeing a lot of the guys, the veteran guys, are playing without thinking. You know, they're not having to stop and think. They're playing a lot faster. The defensive line is being shored up with, you know, the transfers, Jordan Whitley. But I think the strength of that unit right now is the linebackers. You know, they have a couple transfers there with Avery Roberts, looks to be a starter there. Addison Gums, we're seeing the first of him now. The transfer from Oklahoma came in after ACL last year. He is fast, strong, aggressive. Going to be that edge rusher that Oregon State was really missing last year.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about, Angie, is just how the new guys are fitting in. You mentioned Tristan Jebbia. Right now, maybe he is the backup quarterback. And as you pointed out, Jake Luton's taking all the first team reps. Addison Gums mentioned, how's like Avery Roberts fitting in? Nathan Eldridge, how's Tyjon Lindsey? How are some of the new guys that transferred in fitting in?
Yeah, you know, Oregon State fans are going to see a lot of these guys. Tyjon Lindsey kind of worked as, you know, he didn't practice spring term very much, nursing some things. He's been moving his way up from the second to the first team. The guy just continues to kind of make big plays. He's got great field awareness, really good body control, has developed a really good rapport with both quarterbacks. I mean, he's a roommate with Tristan Jebbia, so he knows him well, both coming from Nebraska. But, you know, he's one definitely Beaver fans will see. Avery Roberts, again, will be a starter this year. Addison Gums, look for him. And, you know, Kyrie Fisher is one that hasn't gotten a lot of play, but he transferred in just this summer from Arkansas via kind of a sidestep at a Trinity Valley JC. But he won't be eligible immediately to play. But I think it's like 2 or 3 games into the season, he'll be ready. And just another big body, a big physical linebacker. Nathan Eldridge is the one. I know Beaver fans, the center from Arizona. I actually just updated my projected two deep depth chart on offense. And honestly, we haven't seen him yet. You know, he's coming off a knee surgery. I thought, you know, by week two, he should be working his way into the lineup. You know, it is kind of a plug and play, but he needs to develop some rapport with the rest of that offensive line, and we're not seeing him. So we're not getting a lot from the staff. They like to keep those injuries kind of quiet, mm-hmm. but right now he's not running with the first or second team. In fact, he's been hanging with the trainers. So not a good sign if you're looking at that from an Oregon State standpoint.
I thought one of the other issues they had last year, I think this happens in a lot of places, and it's the reason why, and as you follow recruiting, it's so important, is having the depth to overcome things throughout the course of a season. I mean, you lose a guy like David Morris early in the year. They were plagued with injuries all season, and at times they had a tough time replacing those guys. How do you think they're feeling about the depth this year? And are there position groups where maybe they'd feel okay? Not that you ever want a guy to get hurt, but if you have one, it should happen here. And then maybe other spots that are a little thin that they really need to focus on staying healthy.
Yeah, linebacker is one that they're pretty strong at. But I know what you mean. And there are actually some freshmen that have kind of impressed me, especially in the secondary. So when we started at fall camp, looking at that secondary, in my opinion, it was pretty thin. You know, David Morris has still been kind of slowed with that hamstring that's kind of been nagging him. He plays, but, you know, he's been kind of in and out. Jalen Moore has been in and out. Mm-hmm. But we saw in the offseason they picked up a JC Corner and Nashawn Wright. I definitely think you'll see him. And some of the freshmen, you know, JoJo Forrest, Alex Austin, Achille Arnold, all in the defensive backfield have been running, you know, just as of yesterday, running with the twos. So, you know, that should make Oregon State fans at least somewhat, you know, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing when you have two freshmen competing right. Because, you know, are they really that good? Are they just better than what you have, or are there injuries? And it's a little bit of all the above. Luke Musgrave is another one. The tight end out of Bend. I mean, that kid, you look at him and he reminds me of some of the big wide receivers that Stanford's had over the years. So we've kind of seen him consistently kind of moving up that depth chart as well, kind of in that second team running with the twos there. But, you know, secondary is still scary a little bit, I think, as far as depth, mm-hmm. defensive line, offensive line, you know, kind of your normal. So Oregon State is building depth, but they're nowhere near having right. where I would feel comfortable saying, you know, two or three deep of
right.
starters.
Yeah. Angie Machado is our guest here. BeaverBlitz.com. She's on Twitter at Angie Machado One. Here an update on Oregon State's fall camp. You mentioned depth and defensively with nine players returning. Look, the defense was horrid last year. Nobody would argue that. It's just a fact. But nine guys coming back, Angie. I'm curious, not that, and I think we've talked about this on a podcast. Where is the Tim Tebasar? What the expectation should be for this year. I'm not saying they should be a top defense in the conference or even in the country, but when you return nine guys, what is the expectation for that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm torn because that defense was so bad last year. It's mm-hmm. like, do you really want those nine guys starting? I mean, I'm completely honest.
Right, right.
But obviously you need to get some stops. Run defense was so horrible last year. I mean, I look at Civil War as probably the lowest point that I've seen in Oregon State defense. I mean, second half of that Civil War game, they had a backup quarterback that you knew couldn't, you know, throw the ball, and Oregon State still couldn't stop the run. So, mm-hmm. You know, that kind of stuff. In my opinion, I think Tim Tebasar has a lot of proving to do, because now you can't point to a defense that's still learning the system, learning scheme. They've got to have it figured out. And we've heard that, you know, we've talked to players and they say that it's a lot easier this year. It's more review and not trying to drink from a fire hose. But, you know, I think we see some guys that maybe started last year that we don't see as much of. I mean, Oregon State still started played three true freshmen last year at linebacker. We'll see those guys, and they've improved. But defensive line got some new guys. You have Jordan Whitley, like I mentioned, and some of these guys are really kind of starting to – Simon Sandberg is another name that you'll see as defensive end. So there'll be some new names there. And then the secondary, I think we see some new guys. I mean, Jeffrey Manning has made big strides in the secondary. I think we see more of him. Like I said, Nashawn Wright, he's super raw, but he gives you that height. I think he's 6'4", so he gives you some length there in the secondary that the Beavers haven't had the past few seasons. So there will be new names. Even with those nine returners, there will be definitely some new names.
Well, and I think the main positives last year, we all know, were the young offensive weapons. I mean, Jamar Jefferson in the season, he had, 1,400 yards, 12 touchdowns, almost 6 yards a carry and the defense knew he was going to run the ball, and he was still able to do it. And then Isaiah Hodgins, who really burst onto the scene a couple of games into the year, ended up close to 1,000 yards, had a really big impact for them offensively. I mean, what are those guys capable of this year? Another year in the system, the quarterback position seems slightly settled with Luton coming back, and even if Jebbia ends up starting, but it seems like Jefferson and Hodgins are ready for big years. What are you expecting from them this year?
Yeah, Jefferson, Hodgins, definitely. And then you look at someone like Noah Togiai, who played most of last season hurt. So he's 100%. He's looked really solid. And then the running backs are so, so strong. I mean, AP, you have, and then big things coming from B.J. Baylor, and then Calvin Tyler's back. So they're really four deep at running back. So you have a lot of fresh legs. You know, I talked to Coach Petrie last week, and it gives them, you know, they can do options, you know, whether they have two back sets, whether they, you know, rotate a lot of guys to keep guys fresh. But then wide receivers, like you said, it's not just Isaiah Hodgins. You have Trevon Bradford. You have Colby Taylor's been stepping up. Champ Fleming's had two touchdowns at last Saturday's scrimmage. So, you know, some guys stepping up there as well. But Isaiah Hodgins, he has done some things. He looks like he's a little faster and really has a really good chemistry, especially with Jake Luton right now.
I would love to get you back on in like a week or two and closer to the Oklahoma State game just to check back in. And maybe we have a quarterback announcement at that point, Angie. But I want to leave you with this one. What are we looking forward to? If Oregon State fan is trying to be optimistic and say, hey, maybe they take a jump and they go from 2 to 4 or 5 wins, they surprise people in the conference. What are you looking at right now at camp that you guys are putting on the website for maybe some fans to be looking for?
You know, I think four wins is doable. That's actually where I kind of set the bar for this year. I think they're going to be in a lot more games. I think that we're going to see a lot more competitive product. My biggest, scariest part of this game right now is the kicking game. And I hope the Beavers don't lose any games because of kicking, but it's kind of looks to be a disaster right now, to be honest. You know, we're seeing 50-50 field goal kicks. And so that's a little scary, but I think defensively, they're going to be a lot stronger. I think looking at stopping the run, they're really going after, you know, takeaways. And then offensively, they're going to score points. So if that defense can actually make a stop or two, they'll be in a lot more games than they were a year ago. Yeah.
Absolutely. Angie Machado, BeaverBlitz.com. Great work covering Oregon State's program. Give her a follow on Twitter at AngieMachado1. Angie, we miss you. Thank you for hopping on and talking a little OSU, and we'll catch up with you in a couple weeks.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. There we go. Great stuff from Angie Machado on Oregon State's fall camp. Defensively, we can talk about that a little bit too. Just Oregon State, they've kind of been going quietly under the radar. Oregon getting a lot of the headlines for obvious reasons, expectations, guys returning, 9 wins last year, all of that. Oregon State kind of flying under the radar. I want to talk a little bit about them next on 1080 The Fan. Much to my All right, welcome back in. There's a real threat to one of our favorites out there. We'll explain more coming up in 12 minutes. Good stuff from Angie Machado on Oregon State. You know, they're coming off a 2-win season. Nobody is expecting Oregon State to be a bowl team this year, and if they are, they're lying to you. But it's all about growth, right? When you get to this level of the program, you want to see signs that it's getting up off the ground.
Right.
And last year defensively, I thought they actually got worse than any season in Gary Anderson's era. And Angie's point is valid. Like, they bring 9 guys back defensively. They just lost Jeremy Reichner, too, the defensive lineman, to the injury, which is a big blow for him. But I don't know if having those 9 guys back means you get better. It might just be those 9 guys weren't good. Now, injuries were dealt to them, so they had a couple guys that were out for almost the entire season and couldn't contribute. But I think the most pressure, Oregon State's offense, I just believe it's going to be fine. They'll have a couple games against better opponents where they'll look like absolute dog crap. Oregon State fan will complain about it, but they'll know in their heart they probably are not close to the talent as the other team. I want to see the steps taken defensively. And I just don't know if I trust Tibisar or this group until I can see it actually play out on the field. Because, again, that was the worst defense I've ever... Like, I've actually watched game after game for Oregon State in over what, the 90s? Since the 90s, I probably watched a couple games where they were terrible.
Been a long time.
That was a terrible group. And I'm looking at Tim Tebasaar and that defense to take a step forward.
Yeah, I mean, looking at this, the last 7 years of them defensively, so spanning three different head coaches now, you went from in 2012, you gave up 20.6 points per game. All the way up until last year, you gave up over 45 points per game. The only opponent all year you held below 30 was your win against Southern Utah. Everybody else scored over 30 points against you. And that's, I mean, it's just not a winning formula. And that's where Oregon State, I think, has to make the biggest stride. There's no real concern to me about them offensively. I think this is a good group. She mentioned, and she's right about, you bring back Jefferson at running back, Pierce is back, you feel good about the wide receivers, you feel good about the tight ends.
You got Brandel, you've got Lavaca coming back.
Offensive line should be solid, right? And whether it's Luton or Jebbia, I feel good about the quarterback position. I mean, it's not a great quarterback necessarily, but it's serviceable and it's going to get the job done. Offensively, you're going to be good. And I think you have a really good offensive-minded head coach. So it's not that side of the ball. It's defensively. And I get the concern of, you don't want to just look at the fact that they're returning nine starters and say that means they're going to make a drastic jump, because those nine guys started for a defense that gave up 55 points in the Civil War to a team that couldn't throw the football, and you knew they were going to run it on every down, and they did it for like 6 or 7 yards a pop. I think the realistic jump, and I thought it was an interesting question you asked her, like, what is the realistic expectation that you should have for that side of the ball? I think you look at twofold. One, getting below allowing 40 points per game. I think you got to at least cut 6 points off per game and get back into the 30s, because this is an offense that can score 30 points against some bad defenses in this conference especially. So if you get down to 38, 39 points per game, that's going to make some of those situations more manageable. And I think you want to jump into the top 10 defensively in this conference. You were the bottom of the barrel last year. You were 12th. You were maybe probably the worst defense in the country, I'd imagine. Move up to 9th. That to me is, those are realistic steps. I'm not asking you go from averaging 45 points allowed per game down to 21, or from the 12th defense in the conference down to number 4. I'm saying if you go from 45 into the 30s and go from 12th down to 8th or 9th in the Pac-12 defensively, I think you have a legitimate shot to win 4 games. But if you're the same you were on that side of the ball this year, I don't care how good you are offensively, you're not going to be able to score 47 points per game and win the majority of them. You got to get better on defense.
I think it's a little concerning to find out your center transfer from Arizona hasn't played at all, hasn't practiced whatsoever, in Nathan Eldridge. But, you know, Jamar Jefferson and Antonio Pierce, I mean, that's a nice dynamic duo to have in your backfield. A lot of experience and a lot of yards racked up.
That's got to be one of the better running back combos in the conference, man.
Like, yeah, it probably is up there, yeah.
I mean, I'd have to go back and look through all of them, but that's about as good as it gets.
It's not bad, but I just worry that there's an expectation or a mindset that, oh, you got 1,400 last year. What did Pierce give you? Pierce gave you 425.
And he was battling injuries all year,
right,
too.
So you had almost 1,900 yards of rushing from two guys. The expectation that, oh, you should meet or exceed that.
Sure.
I don't know where I'm at with that. Now, Jake Luton, if he ends up being the guy over Jebbia, which is interesting in itself because Jebbia is going to be back here next year and Luton's gone, but it's about winning games. You have to establish something in Corvallis, and it can't just be, well, let's build our talent up. And you want to get to this point where you're a bowl team within your first 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be the program that goes, oh, yeah, it took us 5 to 6 years, but now we're good.
Right.
Fans don't like to be patient. And so I just think there's a couple things you would just circle. Like Jamar Jefferson, it's a given for people. He's going to be amazing this year, and I believe he'll be good. Will he be 1,400 yards good? I hope so, but I'm not going to put all the eggs in the basket. I think their offense is going to evolve a little bit, and you're relying on a guy like Jake Luton. If you're giving him the reins, one, stay healthy, please, and two, show us the growth. You've been here now for 3 years. You're 24 years old.
You've been around a long time.
You got this granted extra year of eligibility. Go out there and kind of lead them. And again, if you get to 4 wins, I think almost everybody's happy. You doubled your win total in year two.
Without a doubt.
It's just, I look at the schedule and it's not easy. They have one of the tougher schedules in the country. You're starting against Oklahoma State, where you're already a 17-point dog at home. At Hawaii is never a given. I've seen teams play weird there before, and mm-hmm. then you get Cal Poly, which should be a win. Maybe you're 2-1, and then you go down some of the road games. Like UCLA could be a winnable game, but that's on the road.
Right.
Cal, I don't know, maybe, but they kicked your ass last year.
Smoked in Corvallis last year. The unis were sweet for that game, though.
Arizona kicked your ass last year. They ran all over you. You get ASU at home. Washington's probably going to thump you. I look at OSU with a chance to win 4, and I hope that Jonathan Smith and Tim Tebasar specifically are getting this group back. I think the JUCO transfers, the transfer players in general.
That helps.
And then you add like a David Morris who didn't get to play last year due to injury and redshirted. You just hope that that group can come together and have that great chemistry where they can take this program to the positive next step. Because I think the fear is you go out of the year, you only won two again. There's going to be a bit of me that goes, you can't spin that. Two wins again?
I think every record is created differently, though. You know, like, are you 2-10 again this year, allowing the same points per game, getting blown out the same number of times? Then I agree with you 100%. But are you 2-10 because you beat Hawaii and Cal Poly, but every single one of your games, maybe you're in the second half? You know what I mean? Like, you're like, all right, hey, it's a close game at halftime, close game in the third quarter. You don't have the Cal moment from last year. You don't have the Arizona moment from last year.
I think here's the dangerous part with it.
Washington game, the Civil War.
Right. I think most circumstances, you're probably right. The difficulty is just a few years ago, we went through this already with Oregon State. The year that they won four games, it was, oh, look how close they were. They were in a lot of those ball games.
Yeah, they had a chance to win a lot of them that they lost last year.
We've heard it a million times. Colorado, the year they went to the Pac-12, the year before that, they were in a lot of those ball games. Just because you're in them doesn't mean you do take that next step, as we saw in Corvallis from Gary Anderson after they won four games.
Well, and with Colorado as well, because they ended up going to the Pac-12 championship game and then it crumbled on them. So it doesn't necessarily mean. I'm saying you can still have a 2-10 or 3-9 year and show some progress on both sides of the ball. As long as you're improving and you're not getting your ass kicked week in and week out. And I do eventually want to see Jebbia. You know, Oregon State's not going to go to a bowl game this year. I think it's just about the moral victories and the incremental progress at certain position groups. And at some point when your season's out of control, or, you know, say if you're 1-5 or 2-6 off the bat, a couple of games left, Jebbia is your future, right? I mean, that's the guy that you feel like is going to be the starting quarterback for your program moving forward. And you need to get him the reps. I think that's about the defense. I mean, you got 9 guys returning. They took a lot of reps last year. And I think you improve through experience in any job that you do. And I do think it would be a disservice to the future of the program if you go 3-9 this year and Luton starts all 12 games. He's a good kid. I'm rooting for him. I hope he has a good year. But I think at some point, Jebbia has got to get a couple of starts and you build for 2020.
All right, coming up next, there's a real challenger to something, and I'm not sure I'm a big fan of it, or maybe they're going to get me. I'll explain more. Dirt and Sprague back with more.
Hey, welcome back in. 1:33. Got a whole bunch still to get to over the next hour and a half of the show, including Statter Story coming up at 2:15. If you've listened to this show for any considerable amount of time, especially in the last couple of weeks, you know that the man sitting across from me, Brandon Sprague, is a big fan of the claw. A big fan of the White Claw.
Ain't no laws when you claw.
We had a golf outing with a couple of P1s. They invited us out a few weeks back. And what did Sprague bring and text me the night before? Hey, White Claws. Dan, the P1 who hooked us up at the golf outing, we had a great time. He texted me on Thursday. He said every time he walks by White Claws in the aisle, he thinks of you.
Because he wants to buy them. I'm so glad Sprague showed up and introduced me to a great drink.
It's ingrained in his memory. Well, this is actually like the new thing for drinks. Like, this is taking over. So White Claw is obviously a big thing. Truly, is that the other one that was kind of a big deal? Also, recently, did you know that PBR and Natty Light have also rolled out their own hard seltzer?
I did. I saw the Natty Light ones, and the flavors were very interesting, but this is the time to strike.
What kind of flavors did they have?
It was like
a outlandish?
Sour blueberry or something.
Ah, okay.
But anyways, this is the time to strike on the seltzer water with alcohol in it.
Well, these are taking over the world, and we have a new major threat to become the monopoly in the industry.
Got a listener just texted, ahead of the course now. I've got 6 claws in the bag. What do you want me to do?
You're a man of the people. You are a man of the people. Well, what does this do for the claw fans out there, or the hard seltzer fan out there? Four Loko has announced they're going to take over the game. They released on Instagram today with the caption of "Hard seltzers ran so we could fly." And it's a picture of a Four Loko sour seltzer can that says "with a hint of blue raz," labeled the hardest seltzer in the universe. And if you're wondering, yes, it's a Four Loko. So the blood alcohol percentage, 14%.
Yeah, just as an FYI, White Claws are 5.
Yeah, it's that's almost triple.
That's why people drink White Claws, because they're better
for
tasting.
Loco, that's
Coors
like
Light.
A glass of wine. You don't need like 16 or that's like a 5 ounce pour is what you're looking for there.
Almost triple the amount of alcohol per volume than a White Claw.
This is kind of what Four Loko does, don't they? They just jump into the alcohol industry and they say, we've got a cool name. Our cans are colorful. It tastes delicious.
Well, easy with the delicious.
Well, you know what I mean.
It was basically Four Loko happened to burst onto the scene when we were both in college.
Yes,
so
it
took over campuses and then people died and then they had to go away because what do you know? An energy drink mixed with that much alcohol is not good for your insides.
Mm-hmm. I saw a guy at a frat party once at Oregon State. Uh-huh. He had to be talked out of and eventually was to not chug a Four Loko in his butt.
Oh, okay.
He was like, pour it in.
Butt chug, huh?
Pour it in. Hit me harder. And someone's like, no.
Can we pull that?
Can you stop?
No, I don't think I'm going to.
Okay.
What are we pulling?
Hit me harder.
Oh.
Yeah, pour it in. Hit me harder.
No.
Now, I have buddies who used to beer bong them in college and shotgun them in college, and then you end up vomiting like blue stuff. You look like Smurf throw up kind of thing.
A lot of grass was covered in Four Loko.
If you don't know what Four Lokos are like, if you didn't ever drink them, they were essentially, I would say, like a modern Mad Dog 2020.
It's a great app.
With mixed with an energy drink. You know, like everybody knows MD 2020, right? Orange Jubilee, shout out back in the day. You mix it with like a 8 Red Bulls, and that's what a Four Loko was. So they've been trying to find a way back into the game because they took the energy drink part out of their alcohol, I believe, and nobody really wanted to drink it anymore. So they haven't been relevant as of late, but now this is their idea, is launching a 14% hard seltzer. Labeled the hardest seltzer in the universe to try and threaten White Claws.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, you want to threaten White Claw, go ahead. It's not going to work because more people are going to buy White Claw. Nobody wants 14% of a seltzer drink.
Yeah, this is...
That's too aggressive.
That's really aggressive.
Like, what's the highest beer you've ever tried? I think mine was 14% at Crux. It was a whiskey beer.
Probably, yeah.
And
bourbon barrel kind of thing.
Deschutes. You and I tried it.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it. After the sample, I was like, no, I don't want a whole one.
But a few of those aged beers that are up around 11, 12%. But usually those, they only give you, that comes in like the brandy snifter, and you only get like
it's a tiny pour.
10-ounce pour, not a full
Right. They're
pint.
Not giving you,
yeah, you're not drinking a growler of the thing. You know?
No.
You're like, enjoying it a sip at a time.
Not unless you're not going anywhere for the rest of the day or the weekend.
Right. Truly and White Claw own the market.
Okay.
And all these companies are trying to dive into it because they're seeing how insanely hot the product is. It's not going to work. You missed your mark. Truly and White Claw have pounced and they've won.
So
you cannot defeat them.
Do we know how much of the market, have they done a demographic? Because I think we all have in mind, Sprague, you're kind of an outlier for the White Claw market.
Read the text line.
No, I mean, Sprague's right on this. I make fun of is not the right word, because
I love to make fun of them. They're funny.
Right? Like, I enjoy a summer shandy beer. Like, make fun of me all you want. They're delightful in the summer with the lemon
in
them.
Oh, look, Lady Swag's all over them because they're low in calories.
They have almost no
calories. The White Claws are taking over. Taking over the alcohol landscape.
And, yeah, everybody kind of has their particular flavor of which, you know, one. Some you like, some you're like, not quite. But they have enough different flavors that you can usually find one that you like.
There's no carbs. There's no sugar.
Right.
Like, there's no, what's the substitute for sugar? Aspartame. There's no aspartame.
Somebody texted and said, I work in beer sales. White Claw is up 277% this year.
If you ever got a chance to invest in White Claw before this, oh my God, you're printing money. It is insanely hot product right now.
Somebody said, I take a shot of vodka, put it in my White Claw. They are perfect together.
Yeah,
I mean, this is going to be for your niche, I would say, under 30 crown that's looking for the seltzer that's just, it's going to take them over the top for the course of a weekend.
Yeah, they want to party, but they don't like the taste of alcohol is basically what's going
on. Right, you pound two of these bad boys and all right, let's see where the night goes.
When I was in high school, they were known as wine coolers.
Wine coolers, yeah, similar thing.
This guy says, there are people who drink Claw and there are liars. Now, I will defend you. You have not tried this yet, right? Or you've tried it?
The Four Loko?
No. Four. Nobody's drinking this Four Loco. This
I mean, I'm
gonna...
tempted to try one. I'm not going to lie.
Really?
I mean, just, I'm curious. What are you working with?
You wouldn't try the...
I drank your claw on the Coors.
Oh, you did?
I did. I tasted it.
I got black cherry, too. It was a good flavor.
I don't... It doesn't taste bad. It's just... I'm not a seltzer guy.
Mm.
I don't like seltzers, whether it's with booze or without booze. That's just not my cup of tea flavor. So it doesn't taste bad by any stretch of the imagination. I can see why people think they're delicious and refreshing.
Yeah.
It's just not my cup of tea.
It's a real battle against the Coors folk because it is a perfect golf course beverage. If you can keep them cool.
Sure, I could see that.
You know, because most people, I think more people like it than don't. So if you put it on the golf course, it's a fruit, delicious drink.
Right, you think it's healthier.
Yeah, healthier with the same percentage that Coors Light's going to give you.
Anyway, you're going to try Four Loko Seltzer Sour Blue Raz. Let us know, 14% alcohol per volume. I did see one other thing I wanted to get to in terms of taste buds. And this came across the wire, and I didn't quite know how to react to it. Did you know, what would you rather have, a Four Loko Seltzer at 14%? Or an Oscar Mayer hot dog ice cream sandwich?
Four
Loko all day.
Take the Four Loko
every day.
I just have to sip it a little slower.
You're gonna piss me off with this story.
That's just nasty.
I just saw a disgusting food item that they're serving at a baseball stadium, and it really upset me. And you're gonna now tell me that there's hot dogs and ice cream, and that's just gonna ruin it.
You want to be an Oscar Mayer wiener?
No, I don't. I have no interest in ice cream hot dogs.
Here's what it's made of. Candied hot dog bits, thus disproving the old theory. That's what the article says. There's no limit to how worse a hot dog can get.
Yeah, you chop them up. You probably put, what, brown sugar and a little
candied
caramel.
Candied hot dog bits, hot dog sweet cream, spicy Dijon gelato, and a cookie bun.
Okay, would you rather...
I'm not lying. That exists. That's out there.
Would you rather eat that, or would you rather have a slice of pizza with dill pickles chopped up on top? And cheese.
Oh, that's really tough.
That's disgusting, isn't it?
I'm going on a fast at that point.
Rovell tweeted a picture, was like, dill pickle pizza at this ballpark. And everybody's like,
just the thought of that makes me want to vomit.
Not good.
I would take the hot dog ice cream sandwich.
I see. I think I'd take the pizza, but I'm not happy about it.
That flavor mixing together, I would be worried that would ruin pizza for me.
I don't think anything could ruin pizza, truly, could it?
I don't know. But that's out there, too. What would you rather have, the Four Loko or the Oscar Mayer hot dog ice cream sandwich? A couple of food and drink notes for you here on a Wednesday. I do want to get to something. Have you ever been hypnotized? I want to talk about that in the final hour. Ohio State's doing something. Like, really? You think you're that important you can pull this off? That needs to be discussed in the final hour.
We've always kind of known they've thought this about themselves.
How douchey is this move? I do, though, want to ask about how do we feel about kids cheating in sports?
I mean, pro athletes do it, so let's start them young.
Crunch time next on The Fam.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, as low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. I was not at the Glorious House of Gains today.
I can't even believe it!
Not happening. Andrew Luck, maybe more injured than we originally thought. We got to get to that coming up in the final hour. Also, have you ever rested a body part in urine?
Just my feet in the shower.
What's the old, what's the dodgeball line? It tastes good. And it's sanitary. Yeah. And I like the taste.
And I like the taste.
We'll talk about that. Start a story coming up in the final hour as well.
Necessary. Is it necessary for me to drink my own urine?
That's what it is.
R.I.P. Rip Torn.
Absolutely. Let's get to this, though. And this has actually happened. I think the softball World Series is going on right now, isn't it? At the old Oppenrose Field.
So is the Little League World Series.
Little League World Series gets started tomorrow in Williamsport.
Okay, I've enjoyed all the people tweeting you, saying congratulations, Sprague, for making
Sprague
it.
Boys.
The Sprague boys are out there.
We are amazingly talented. I'm not shocked we made it that far.
Well, how about this? New England's representative in the Little League World Series, the Barrington, Rhode Island Little League team, they have been accused. Now, they're going to the Little League World Series. They've been accused of getting there by stealing signs.
Mm.
Pat Dutton, who is the manager of a team in New Hampshire who lost to Barrington in Saturday's regional final, came out after the game and said they got there because they flat out cheated. He said, quote, you can see runners on second base leaning in, looking and giving hand gestures to the kid at the plate, indicating what kind of pitch it is and where it's located. You can do that in big league ball, but in little league ball, it's unsportsmanlike, it's dishonorable, and it's disgusting. So they did it the whole tournament, got away with it, and now that's what's representing New England in the Little League World Series. It's a bad look.
So little Spygate?
Time out.
Do we have a little Spygate going on?
We have mini Spygate going on.
I don't know the specific Little League rules, but are there specific rules in Little League about sign stealing? Or is it one of those unwritten rules?
Okay.
In which case, change up your signs between the catcher and the pitcher more often.
Here we go.
I guess that was going to be my
You guys aren't familiar with the tournament rule book at the Little League World Series?
No, I've not committed that one to memory.
Okay. We were never good enough to get close to this conversation growing up, so we didn't concern ourselves.
Hey, I know this like the back of my hand. Don't you guys worry, okay? According to Tournament Rule 3 from the Little League World Series, if in the judgment of the umpire, a player, coach, manager is deemed to be stealing and relaying pitch selection or a location, it is considered unsportsmanlike and said offender is to be ejected from the game.
Here's the problem with...
So technically, yes, it is hypothetically and literally cheating.
So this is their problem and where they're going to run into an issue here. Should a coach care enough in Little League to want to cheat? No, I probably wouldn't think of it, but some coaches are insane.
I kind of hope you do like little kid soccer. Your daughter starts playing. You find ways to cheat.
Yeah, I mean, look, some coaches are really into it. I never would be that guy. It's little kids playing a sport. They're just trying to have fun. The Little League is in trouble here, though, because they're hypocrites. So you're telling me at this level, it's unethical and we shouldn't be doing it. But at the next level up, it's okay. How does that make any sense?
Because they're kids.
But they're still kids.
I know.
They're still kids.
I know.
They're from 8 to 10. Now they're 10 to 12.
Is it okay for kids to take steroids?
Well, no, but...
but I mean, a lot of
people... There's $1 million on the line for an arm wrestling contest. Maybe junior's the best bet.
I think there's this notion that little kid sports are supposed to be pure. Well, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and there's nothing pure about Major League Baseball.
There's also nothing pure about putting them crying on national television for 10 minutes because they lost a game that they really wanted to win. But they do that.
True.
That's actually more clear than I thought there would be something in the rules. Yeah. And at that point, it's up to your umpires. And Little League has to, you know, as a manager, you go out and you talk to the umpire in the game and say, listen, this is overt. If it was overt, I mean, if you got a kid out at second base just, you know, pointing at him or putting up one or two fingers if he could read what is coming in and it's plain as day and everybody in the stands knows that he's doing it, then yeah, the umpire needs to say something.
He's standing out there on second base, waving his left hand.
Well, if
exactly.
You're number one, fastball high and tight, here it comes.
If you weren't the team that complained about this, but you lost to him, are you mad or do you care?
Yes.
Yeah, I think you're frustrated for the kid, especially if it's written that way.
Yeah, and because I think, well, here, let me read this other quote. So the coach apparently during the game, there was the game they were playing, there was apparently another team playing this Barrington team, and they lost 2-1, and this manager alerted the umpire during the game. They were like in the stands or something, and they hollered like, hey, they're stealing signs out there. And the umpire issued, a warning or whatever to both sides. He then said nothing happened from it, obviously. He said after the game, that's something these kids don't learn on their own. That's something that they're taught. They're coached to do that. Obviously, the team condones it. They're coached to do it. Personally, that's something that I'm completely against. That's where I think you're drawing the line here. This is not about the kids trying to find a competitive way and coming up with a system to relay stealing signs to the kid at the plate. This is the coaches telling the kids, here's what you look for. Do this with your hand. The coaches came up with this system. That's what makes it ridiculous.
Well, and the coaches are ridiculous for this because they care so much and they have to win and get to William or wherever they're doing the softball event that they're willing to do this. Now, here is my overall point, though. While it is outlawed on this level, as you pointed out, it's okayed after this level, right? To a certain extent, it's like, okay, we still sign.
Well,
signs,
not necessarily.
Normal.
Like, there's rules against this in Major League Baseball, and there's investigations that happen. Remember, what was it, the Red Sox and Astros last year, I think, of they had a technology system in the dugout.
Yeah, you can't use the Apple Watch or have cameras set up at designated points.
That's next level cheating. I'm talking about basic guy from second looks at signs, see where the glove is.
Yeah, big leaguers do this all the time.
Right, so my point is, while you might want to preserve the youth and the honesty of the integrity of the game, you're allowing it after they're like eight. So then you're just teaching them. I learned a lot more when I was 10 to 21 than I did from 9 to 1.
That's no different than peewee hockey. You're not allowed to have full body checks at the lower levels of peewee hockey. They have to wait until, I don't know if it's high school or college, when you can actually lay into somebody. But at the peewee levels, you're not allowed to check.
Yeah. But my point is, you're okaying the term cheating to a certain extent after they get past this level.
Well, here's the difference, though.
You're teaching them that eventually this is okay, but right now, please don't do that. That's not
a
smart way of doing it.
I don't think you're teaching them that. I think eventually athletes come up with things on their own to find a way to cheat. Like, athletes, you're not teaching it. Like, eventually the athlete's going to decide, hey, we can come with that guy. We're clearly seeing the catcher put the one down every time. We know it's a fastball. Like, dude, I'll wave my hand and I'll let you know it's a fastball. Like, that's the players coming up with it. I don't think they're taught to do that. That's just something that develops. And the difference is, when you get older, you understand how to combat against this. Like, there's a reason the whole pitching mound visit limitation was controversial for players, was because one of the main reasons they go to the mound later in games
change
is to say, dude, that guy on second base is waving his arm every time I call a curveball. We got to change up the signs, and then you're ahead of the game. And then the guy on second doesn't know what you're calling. You don't have the ability to combat something like this lower. There's like a mind game that gets played at the major league level. I get it. Yes, it's cheating. But there's like a combative, like, okay, he's stealing signs. Let's change our signs.
I don't like calling it cheating, by the way. If you're stealing a sign from second versus having a camera, you got a camera, you're a cheater. If you're on second and you're picking up what they're throwing down, I kind of just call that thinking outside the box and being smart and helping your team.
So are we rooting for Barrington in the Little League World Series or against them?
I don't know. Are they playing the Sprague Boys? Who do the Sprague Boys have first?
I don't know. All this article says is they play the Southeast Regional Champs from South Riding, Virginia on Thursday.
Well, this is softball, though.
No, this is the Little League World Series.
This is a boy. Yeah. Sprague's going to kill them.
Well, they got to meet Sprague. So they play tomorrow. It's on noon. It's on right when our show starts tomorrow on ESPN. Barrington versus Virginia.
Given how the country reacted to Spygate and Belichick and the Patriots, I'm going to assume most everybody is rooting against them. Because, again,
that's a good connection I didn't even make.
We also don't need another title in Boston.
Yeah, very true.
That damn kid's going to be out with his sign, and there's going to be a Little League World Series on his stupid sign with his other 15 Boston championships that he has seen won since he was seven.
The Barrington, by the way, they issued a statement to Boston.com saying the allegations are unfortunate and they denied any wrongdoing. They said, we hold our coaches, players, and teams to the highest standard and do not coach or condone unsportsmanlike behavior of any kind. Nothing to see here.
We're on to Seattle.
That's what Barrington said. So there you go. Do you condone cheating for little kids
to Virginia
in the Little League World Series?
We're on to Sprague.
55305. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. By the way, I texted my trainer. I told him, squat challenge coming to a Crunch near you.
Let's not do this. Can we not do it? Can it just be
He wants to do this. He's eager about it.
300 pounds squatting.
He just rolled his eyes at it, too.
All right, well, Crunch is not liable. The fan's not liable. You did this as a grown-ass adult, so don't be the guy who volunteers.
We'll have proper spotting there.
I broke my back. It's spinal.
All right. If you get a lisp just to say that, it's going to be
amazing.
You should,
yeah. That'd be pretty fun. All right, coming up in the final hour, Statter Story at 2:15. We got to get to the Andrew Luck stuff, including the tie-in of urine somehow, some way. I'll explain how that all makes sense. How egotistical is Ohio State? We will explain to you. Also, have you ever been hypnotized? 55305. Loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Spring on 1080 The Fan.